it took a while on some very important issues before the city. So I'll call the regular meeting of the Atascadero City Council to order. May we have a report on closed session, please, Rob?
Yes, prior to the regular session, Councilman, in closed session, and no action was taken and requires reporting under the Brown Act.
And we only considered items 2A, 1, and 2. We did not get to the item B2, which is the property acquisition on Grays Creek Reservation, and we are going to try to do that after this meeting. So the next item on the agenda is Pledge of Allegiance. Please join Councilmember Burrow. We have a roll call, please.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Here.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Here.
Mayor Luna.
Here.
All present.
We have a motion to approve the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Bayrou and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Brendler to approve the agenda. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bayrou.
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0. Motion passes.
Next item on the agenda, there are no presentations tonight. So the next item on the agenda is the consent calendar. There are five items on the consent calendar. Anyone on the council want to pull one of those? Seeing none, I'll ask the same of the public. Is there anyone in the public who wants to pull one of these five items? Seeing none, I'll bring it back and
move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember O'Malley, second by Councilmember Clay to approve the consent calendar. May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0. Motion passes.
So we move to item B1, which is an appeal of the Planning Commission action on August 7, 2007, reconsideration of the tentative parcel map at 10,270 Santa Ana Road. Community Development Director Warren Frace will give the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This item is an appeal of a parcel map that was denied by the Planning Commission a couple of months ago. Just a little bit of background on this project. It's located at 10,270 Santa Ana Road, right off of Graves Creek Road. This is the parcel right here. General plan designation is rural estates, and the zoning is residential suburban. In the residential suburban area, the minimum lot size is anywhere between 2.5 acres and to 10 acres. The actual lot size is calculated based on a formula that takes into account where the lot is, the size of the lots around it, septic suitability, lot slope. So there's a formula that we use to calculate that lot size. The site description, this is an aerial photo of the site. You can see there's a lot of topography. Lot size calculations, as I mentioned, are calculated based on a formula. The lots size calculations came out to 3.9 for lot 1 and 3.15 for lot 2. The reason the lot sizes are different is that the slopes vary on the lot from one location to the other location. This is the subdivision design that was reviewed by the Planning Commission. The proposal was to take the entire lot and subdivide it into two lots, where the existing house would be located in the front on lot 2, and then lot 1 would be created in the back that would create a new building site in the back corner here with an envelope that's on the flatter area. And then the remainder of lot 1 that's steeper would be outside the building envelope, and part of that would have been put into a tree preservation easement. This is a close-up of the design plan for the new house. This would be the building envelope here. The septic system was proposed in this location here with an expansion area for the septic system here, and the access driveway would be along this property line right here. There was let's see, I think five native trees that were slated for removal. And then there was four additional trees that would be impacted. So there was a mitigation program that was required for that. One of the issues that did come up was the proximity of the septic system to the swale. The septic system was set back 50 feet from the swale. There was a lot of discussion about that. Staff determined, though, that that was consistent with our local plumbing ordinance as well as the Regional Water Quality Control Board's basin plan requirements. But there's some new information. We'll talk about that in the next couple slides. As I mentioned, there's a tree preservation easement. This is the area right here that was slated for the tree preservation easement. That was one of the benefits that's required by the general plan. Anytime you subdivide a lot that has a slope greater than 30%, it has to provide some sort of easement or public dedication. In this case, the tree preservation easement met that criteria best. As I mentioned, the Planning Commission has denied this parcel map. They made six different findings to support their findings of denial. Their main concerns were they were worried about the water quality issues related to the septic system and the swale, and they were also worried and concerned about the compatibility of this project with the surrounding neighborhood and whether the way the map was designed, whether that constituted orderly development. One of the issues that came up during the Planning Commission hearing was the presence of two ponds in the location of the swale area and in the vicinity of where one of the septic systems was proposed. Staff did go out and verify that there was two areas that do hold water and do qualify as ponds. We asked the applicant to have those surveyed. This map here shows where they are. There was a larger pond located here and then a smaller pond located here. This is where the house was proposed with the septic system located here. The ponds change the analysis of the project significantly. Issues that the applicant is going to raise to the council during their presentation, we believe, is the option to change the project and revise the way the project's designed to address a lot of the issues that were raised at the Planning Commission's hearing. We've included in the staff report the applicant's revised project. Now, that hasn't been analyzed at all by staff, and it's not actually before the council tonight. It's basically additional information. If the council believes that this revised plan is worthy of further consideration, the best action will be to refer that back to the Planning Commission and staff for a new hearing. That way we can reanalyze the project since staff hasn't analyzed this revised design, recirculate the CEQA documents and analyze the new information with the ponds and the additional setback that would be required, then hold a new public hearing at the Planning Commission and determine if this revised project would address the issues that the Planning Commission originally denied the project for. So that's going to be one of the alternative actions that the council can take tonight. What they are proposing is to move the house further away from the swale and to move the septic system away from the swale. So it does appear that that would address some of the issues that were raised at the Planning Commission. The other is to move the flag to the location of the driveway, which was a concern with the neighborhood and Planning Commission as well. So in terms of your environmental determination, there is an existing negative declaration that was circulated. As I mentioned, we don't believe that's adequate anymore just because of the new information, but that was reviewed by the Planning Commission. So in terms of staff's recommendation, we basically have two recommendations to the council. The first would be to uphold the Planning Commission's decision to deny the project and deny the appeal. The second option would be is if the council believes that the applicant's revised project is worthy of further consideration, is to refer that back to staff and the Planning Commission for a new hearing. That'll conclude staff's report. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Warren. Councilmember Burrow. Let's do ex parte. We'll start with Councilmember Burrow.
That's fine. I did go to the site. I went with Mike Brendler, and we did talk to two different residents, you know, neighbors, while we were there.
Mayor Tim Brendler?
Yes, I visited the site, as Councilmember Barreau indicated, spoke to the neighbors, also received some correspondence, which I believe the entire council did in reference.
Yeah, I did get those emails as well.
Yeah, I received those letters and emails, but I had no personal contact with anyone. Councilmember O'Malley?
Same for me. Emails, no personal contact.
Yeah, I visited the site, and one of the workers took me down and showed me where the proposal for the house is going to be, and also where the easement that went in, the easement driveway, or whatever you want to call it. And then when I was coming back to my car, one of the neighbors came down to talk to me. I wasn't sure what his name was, but go ahead.
One of the information I did get from the neighbor is that they had heard in the past that the previous owner had tried to subdivide the lot, but they were short. And so now it appears that they do meet it. Of course, it's always just barely. Do we have any record of any previous attempts to subdivide that lot and why it can qualify now when, you know, secondhand it didn't before?
I don't have any information. We may have records on a previous application that didn't proceed. When we get into these very tight maps, a lot of whether or not you can divide it has to do with the quality of the engineering work that's done. I know today with the computers and the CAD drafting, the engineers can look at a lot more alternatives, and they can basically figure out more creative ways to arrange the lot lines. This one literally took, working with staff, over a year, looking at various options, trying to make a proposal that actually could meet the criteria. So I know it was very difficult to do it, so I can imagine somebody before could have, given up before they got to a solution.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes. In regards to the compatibility of the neighborhood, is strictly on the size of the lots, the acreage?
Well, in terms of the lot size, I don't believe that was the issue. I know there was some testimony during the Planning Commission meeting that these lots were much smaller than the surrounding lots, but that actually isn't the case. Most of the lots in this area are in the 3 to 4 acre range. I think the Planning Commission just was concerned that the way this lot was split and the way the flag was oriented, that it just wasn't going to be compatible with the neighborhood. But they didn't elaborate in terms of the detail why they came to that conclusion.
But, Warren, the lot above it was also split and has a long flag or driveway back. Is that not right?
Yeah, the neighboring lot is a flag lot as well.
And it was split, just like they're asking to do the same thing. And as far as compatibility, I walked back there. There's a beautiful spot for a home. It wouldn't even be seen by hardly any of the neighbors. It's trees all around it. So as far as the water, did that you got that cleared up with the new proposal? And I know you haven't thoroughly researched it, but they're far enough away now from the pond areas.
It appears that their new proposal will be able to meet all the setback requirements.
Okay, and then as far as the formula goes, the way it's worked out, it's from 2.5 to 10, and they meet that formula with these 3.9 and 3.15?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. Well, I'm actually glad some more information came forward, because I had some concerns about some of the findings. However, all you need is really one finding to be upheld, and the denial would be appropriate. Is that true from the Planning Commission? All of these findings would have to be reversed?
Yes. The Planning Commission could deny a map by just making one finding of denial. They made 6 findings of denial. So they would need to be able to make those in the affirmative to approve.
Thank you. And I just want to briefly review these because, again, I had some questions about some of them. It appears that finding one that could be mitigated, and it looks like there's a proposal in on that as far as water quality issues in the ponds.
Yes, that was mainly related to the setback distance from the ponds, and it appears that you could come up with a solution to that.
Okay, but that hasn't been reviewed by staff yet.
We haven't reviewed it or done the CEQA circulation, and that's why it would recommend to recirculate and send it back to commission.
Sure, and finding two, I question that on the visual and environmental impacts. I know in other projects we've required some native plantings that were able to provide some screening, and there's been a solution proposed on this.
I believe that finding is mainly related to the water quality issue as well.
Okay.
I think there may be a slight, you know, visual potential issue, but that's not typically an issue that, you know, raises the concern of denying a map.
And denial number three, it sounds like there is an alternative driveway proposed.
Yeah, the driveway's in the same location, but in terms of trying to meet their minimum lot size the first time, they didn't actually have the flag where the driveway was, which I think was one of the concerns with the orderly development issue. This revised proposal corrects that by putting the flag and the driveway in the same location, which is always preferable.
Okay. And on finding number four, was there any response particularly on that? Because it seems like you can't really address that. There is some problems with the shape and irregularity.
I think a lot of that had to do with the location of the flag not being in the same location as the driveway originally.
So that finding may be tied to that?
Most likely.
Okay. And I think probably a critical issue is the emergency access. And again, is that addressed? I'm looking at justification number five, not adequate for safe emergency vehicle access is the referenced in the denial. And I wasn't sure if that was really an issue in this or not.
We don't believe emergency access is a significant issue.
And then item number six, is that addressed in the new information?
The commission obviously has some discretion in terms of what they think orderly development looks like, but it does appear that the revised plan is a much more regular-shaped lot with a flag in the location of the driveway. It seems like you could make the findings that that is orderly development at this time.
My understanding from the Planning Commission, it was a 7-0 vote against this project. However, was it just a couple of members were wanting some more information, or were more, do you remember how many folks had preferred to see some more information?
Well, I don't recall anybody making a motion for additional information. I know there was a lot of concern that all the commissioners expressed based on the issues that were raised by the neighborhood, and I think those main issues were that the lot was somewhat unorthodox in its design, and that there seemed to be a issue with the septic leach fields that close to the ponds. I think those were the main two issues that all seven commissioners felt were major concerns.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
Oh, thank you. Warren, a question. The responsibility of identifying those original the ponds, does that fall on the applicant originally?
It is the responsibility of the applicant's engineer to design a system that meets all the plumbing and regional basin plan requirements for setbacks. This was a little unusual in that it did require an off-site survey to identify these ponds, and in the dry season like we have here, the ponds aren't readily visible. You can see there are low areas, but they don't, you know, if you just walk out to the site and do your routine, you know, review of the site, It's not obvious that there's ponds right there. So, you know, it's understandable that it could have been overlooked when they did the original engineering. That's why we have asked them to go back and survey it so we could figure out what those setbacks are, and that has been done at this point.
And a question in reference to this potential of a previous denial, would that be something that if it was turned back over to staff that would be investigated?
Not necessarily, just because each application stands on its own. So if there was a previous application that was denied or that just never got all the way to a hearing, it legally I don't think is really material to this application.
I see. And then but the primary issue tonight is to either uphold or overturn the Planning Commission's denial or finding?
Those are the two options that were recommended to the council equally.
All right, thank you.
Warren, if we send this back to staff and the Planning Commission, and when I say send it back, I'm talking about the revised tentative parcel map, do you have an estimate as to the cost? Because the city would essentially be picking up that cost in staff time. And
it would be fairly similar to our standard processing fee. I think a tentative map usually runs around $3,000 for, and that covers the staff review, the noticing, and a single hearing. So some of the work's already been done, obviously, so you're probably somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 in staff time to get this back to a hearing.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Clay?
Yes. In regards to, the commissioner's comments, I know Commissioner Jack said new information received made him want more information, and Fonzie said she did not have enough information about the drainage area. And then Marks had something to say about the septic system and so on. As far as the configuration of lot, there's a lot of lots in that area. They're not just square. You understand where I'm coming from. A lot of the lots are, because of the way the road winds and so on, are configured in a different.
Correct. Throughout Atascadero, as we get out in the hills, we see a variety of creative designs to lots, right, just based on the topography and where you can get access that drives that. I think the main issue with the orderly development was that the flag portion was located here on this side of the lot, which was fairly steep.
I see.
Where the driveway was located here, and I think that was the main issue that the commission wasn't satisfied with.
So where it's at now, it basically runs right with the other flag lot that's paved that goes way back in there?
Is
that
correct? Right?
Yeah. So the lot just adjacent to it.
Yeah, the other flag for the other lot is located right there. It's
an extremely long flag. Okay. All right, and the septic portion is cleared up, although you haven't.
We haven't done a formal review of it, okay. But just based on distance, this location here would be 200 feet from the nearest pond and much further than that from the larger pond.
Yeah. Okay, and then for the record, I know years back when we talked about build-out, why every possible split was determined in our build-out in regards to our population. That was my understanding. It was cleared up many times. So anyway, that's it.
Okay, seeing no other lights, is the appellant or the representative of the appellant here? If you'd step to the mic, state your name and for the record.
My name is Kim Koch. I'm with Farpoint Design Group. We prepared the submittals for this project.
Okay.
About that. Oh, okay. Sorry. Do you have questions, or would you like to?
Whatever you want. Want to handle this. So, Councilmember O'Malley has a question, but if you want to make a statement first, that'll be fine.
Mr. O'Malley, you want to go ahead?
Well, I am concerned that there were a number of issues raised that could you comment why they weren't involved in the first presentation? And there are a number of these issues in terms of road location and the identifying low spots in the ground that are ponds when there's a wetter year.
I think as far as the configuration, for the past 12 months, we've worked in kind with planning department. And, you know, incrementally, we got the project closer and closer to what we felt was a viable project. The somewhat irregular configuration of the lot with the access in one location and the flag in the other location did have precedent with previous commissions. So somehow during that process, working with the planning department, we just adopted that configuration, not really realizing that this commission is totally against that type of configuration. As far as the study of the ponds, when the engineer went to the county records or where he goes, it shows as a dry gully or a dry gulch. And so we didn't really pay any attention to it, nor did the planning department, because that's the way it showed everywhere. Now, then when we had the hearing, we heard from the residents there and found out it does indeed hold water. So at that time, we were caught with not knowing that information, not being able to integrate that information into the configuration that we had presented. So what I would have rather had is the Planning Commission, in light of those new discoveries, refer us back to staff and discuss them and propose the alternates prior to the vote. You know, during the commission, they asked for more information, and yet they voted 7-0 to just deny the project. I feel that's not fair. What we've done now that we know the concerns of the neighbors, the concerns of the city, the new parameters for the septic system, is we've come up with an alternative configuration that the engineers and all my consultants feel is a very viable configuration, although it hasn't gone through the formal submittal process with the Planning Commission. Our goal is to have a project that fits into the neighborhood. I did a plat and I sent it to the council, showing that there are three flag lots of similar configuration or the new configuration within 1,500 feet. Additionally, all the lots are irregular to some extent because of the topography and the way they were subdivided originally. We've fulfilled all the development guidelines. We have the proper size of lots. We have the proper grades and everything else. So I don't know what else we can do.
Okay, well, let me back to my first question. It sounds like there aren't any recorded blue line creeks where these ponds are. It wasn't something that showed up on a map.
No, they're not.
There have been a number of neighborhood issues raised. Did you have any form of neighborhood input prior to this or since the Planning Commission hearing, or how have you gone about incorporating in neighborhood concerns that have been raised?
No, we didn't have much formal contact with the neighbors. We talked to some of them. We were a little bit, when those issues came up at the meeting, I went through item by item and tried to address the concerns to the extent we could of all the issues that the neighbors expressed. Because, again, we want to be a good neighbor. We want to, you know, it's counterproductive for us to have a project that takes away from the value of a neighborhood. It's not productive for us. It's not productive for the rest of the people.
Councilmember Clay.
You've read the six denial, I'm sure, and with this new configuration, do you feel like you've addressed all six of those, or at least got close enough to where you can?
I definitely do. Additionally, we've brought in, and he's here tonight, a consultant, a consultant for the environment, Cletus England. He'll be speaking here after I'm done, and you can ask him some questions. And everything we're doing, we're addressing the retention of runoff from the driveway so that it percolates through the soil before it even gets close to the creek. We have a septic system 200 feet away from the ponds. And so, yes, we've addressed everything. And additionally, all the development guidelines that we fulfilled the first time are hopefully fulfilled this time. It's just pending the planning department's
scrutiny.
You wouldn't be against meeting with the neighbors and going over some of their concerns?
I have no problem whatsoever.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes, thank you. You heard the issue raised earlier about there was previous denial or potential of a previous denial on that lot. And do you have any knowledge of that at all?
The knowledge I have of it was from the previous, when we purchased the property, the owner said that he tried to go down to the city and do it, do the subdivision. I don't believe a formal application was ever made. He gave me the workup sheet that the planning department gives you, that gives you the development parameters, but he never got percolation tests, and I don't think he had he didn't have an adequate topo done. So I think what happened is exactly what Warren expressed. A lot of people, when it's a tough project and there's a lot of work involved, that they opt out rather than pursue it.
Thank you.
Councilmember Clay.
So are you saying that you don't feel that it was ever officially gone forward with?
Not to my knowledge.
Right.
Not to my
Thank
knowledge.
You.
Councilmember Burrow.
When I went to visit the site, there is kind of a beginnings of a driveway where the easement, you proposed the easement to be, and it meanders. Does the easement have the entire driveway in it, and it will avoid the trees? Or
yes, it does. It
okay.
does. And any trees impacted in, I believe, in that in the driveway area are non-native trees. So that was not a concern. The engineer, the grading engineer in his preliminary plan did address the emergency egress and the slope requirements as it relates to width of driveway, turnaround areas, and so forth. So those things were all done during the discovery and the formulation of the second alternative.
And there was some concern expressed by the residents about the state of the current residence. And I don't know if you can speak to that, if you're in charge of that, but I guess this has been going on for a long time. When I walked by there, there were some impacts on trees in the rear of the existing house. There was no tree fencing. There was some materials piled under the drip line of a tree. So there is concern from the residents that was expressed to me about the quality of the project being done and how are they going to treat the development of the next parcel. So I wanted to bring that to your attention if you would like to speak to that.
Yeah, yes, I would. Well, we do have tree fences up. As I explained to the commission, when the house was purchased, you don't really know the condition of the house. During the course of construction, we kept discovering more and more problems and more severe problems. Actually, one of the residents brought up the fact that the septic system didn't work. So part of we've resubmitted plans to expand the new septic system. We've had to rebuild the roof structure that we didn't know was bad. So unfortunately, it's been an incremental process. At this point, we almost have the approval for the second phase, which includes redoing the septic system, redoing the roof, and everything else. All the submittals have been made, and over the counter, they've been approved. So we're just going through the formal process. And also, this process of subdivisions taken so long, it's hard to develop a project not knowing where you're going. I keep thinking, in a month we'll have this thing, at least know one way or another. So at this point, we have the windows on site. We have a crew working there almost on a daily basis. So we expect, and the weather's going to start turning severe maybe if we're lucky. And we're trying to weather everything in and get that project going forward. It's not to my benefit to have to carry that monthly mortgage every month and not have progress made on the project. So, and I sympathize with the neighbors too. I apologize to the neighbors. We've been trying to maintain the crews, keep the job site clean. We have additional fencing going in as a requirement of the leach field expansion and the new driveway we're putting in.
Yeah, the trees are in the rear of the house. The ones I did see, the tree fencing was up on the side and
right,
the front.
Right.
But there is a fairly large tree in the back that had
That one's going to be to the left of that tree, towards where the driveway is going to go, is where the new septic system is going to be. So that's all going to be fenced off. And my apologies for not having it done.
Councilmember Clay.
Certainly, you're not remodeling your house to make it worse, are you?
Trying not to.
Yeah,
it's turned into the money pit.
Okay, that's my question.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Just a word of advice I've learned from remodels is take the largest number you can imagine, multiply it by two, and it'll take twice as long to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
I was wondering, though, on the requirements, what are the requirements for Councilwoman Bayrou mentioned roping off trees on the back of the property. What are the requirements for if you've got a remodel going on? Do you have to, how much tree protection do you need to do?
Well, you need to have tree protection within 20 feet of any area of the project that you're working on. Typically, a remodel, if it's just on the interior, is on the inside, so it doesn't necessarily trigger tree protection. But if you're doing work outside, storing materials or whatnot, you still are subject to the tree protection requirements. So at that point, you would have to have fences up. So it's one of those kind of issues where we probably or we may not have required a formal tree protection plan because everything was assumed to be inside. But as the project progresses, it may actually start to impact trees, and then the tree ordinance does kick in at that point with the tree protection fences being required.
So, for example, if you've got to redo your leach field or something, basically any 20 feet within any trees within 20 feet of any outside activity would need to be protected or marked?
Yeah, anytime we're doing septic or leach field work, then it almost always triggers a tree protection plan at that point.
But that's just within 20 feet of any activity?
Yes.
Not the whole property?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Clay?
Yeah, just one other question. You said that within 1,500 feet of the project that there was how many flag lots, splits and stuff?
Well, there's the one contiguous, and then there's another one over on Graves Creek Road, which is almost, the three of them, if you took the numbers off, you would not be able to distinguish one
so
from
another. So there's two additional ones is what you're saying?
There's three total.
Three total, including yours or three others?
No, two others.
Plus this. Okay.
There's an overhead.
That's fine.
Yeah, you can see.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, very interesting. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Koch. Did you say Mr. England was?
Yeah, I'd like to introduce Mr. England, biologist. Thank you.
Thank you. And then if anybody else wants to speak on this item, would they please line up behind Mr. England?
Sorry, I apologize. I was just trying to get some visual aid started here. My name is Cletus England. I work for Sierra Delta Corporation as a biologist, and we have done a review of this project in regards to the swale and the ponds. Just briefly, the original leach field, of course, was located quite close to one of the ponds and the swale. This new alternative that they're we're referring to does place the leach field outside of a 200-foot setback that is a requirement and recommendation for the Regional Water Quality Board for any types of water storage structures that are engineered where a pond such as these would meet that definition. I'm sorry. Thank you. Like that? Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. So if these are the two ponds, if you will, on this new alternative site plan, the leach field is now located out here outside of a 200-foot setback. I believe this line right here, although everything's the same color, it's difficult to see, would be the setback. Other potential impacts to the drainage swale and to the ponds would be related to hardscape runoff. The driveway and also the building or residence itself. As the driveway comes in here, there's an elbow right here, and there's a surface impoundment that is being proposed for the driveway runoff that would impound the water and allow it to percolate into the ground before entering the swale. During large storm events, of course, it might fill up very quickly. It would be designed to impound the water and to actually meter the water out to a level which would be consistent with a two-year storm event. And also for the home itself, outside of it, all the gutters, excuse me, all the gutters and roof runoff would be routed through gravel drains into a subsurface detention and infiltration system, which crudely could be described as a gravel-filled pit in the ground that would be covered up. It would not be visible. Create an infiltration system where, again, the water from that runoff would be allowed to infiltrate into the soil before reaching the swale. So based on these three modifications to the plan, we determined that there would not be any significant impacts to the swale or to the ponds themselves.
Thank you, Mr. England. Any questions? Thank you.
My name is Will Richeson. I own the property on the north of the property under discussion. The larger pond is on my property. It has been there for over 60 years. I have maps that are over 100 years old that show the swale. And the main thing about this whole property is the drainage. The property sits on top of a cone-shaped hill, which is about 100 feet high from the low point to the high point, and the ground underneath is sandstone and decomposed granite or granite. We've lived there for 33 years, and many rainy seasons have come and gone, and the water does not soak into the ground there. The ground is so hard that the water runs off. It runs downhill, and then it sets in the two ponds and between the ponds, and it can't absorb the water, so the water runs on down the hill. So a septic system is going to have to be so expensive that I'm sure that the owners will be discouraged before they get halfway through. And if they put in just the regular tank and drain lines, the ground is not going to be able to absorb that effluent. And in the rainy season, it's going to run into the ponds and run down the hill, and all the neighbors all the way down the hill are going to have that stinky effluent running down the creek. It's happened before when they had property up the hill where their tanks weren't properly installed, and you get that. You just don't want that smelly water running down through your property. And so my objection to the whole thing is that the septic system is going to be so expensive that the owners are going to be discouraged before they get through, and the city will spend a lot of time running back and forth trying to get things going, and it's just not going to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richardson.
My name is Lena Ellison, and I have lived at 10390 Santa Ana Road for 21 years. My property shares the west border of the subject property. On August 7th, the Atascadero Planning Commission unanimously denied a proposed lot split of the subject property. Their findings for denial were numerous, and while the applicant may make some changes to his plan, certain findings for the denial cannot be changed. First, the proposed subdivision will be a detriment to the adjacent properties and is not consistent with the character of the immediate neighborhood. Long Valley was intended to consist of large lots or ranchettes. Most lots are 5 acres or more. That is what we all bought into in Long Valley Ranch. The lots in the neighborhood there have been built out for years. Also, lots in Long Valley Ranch are permitted already to have a second unit, allowing for a possible 3 additional or 4 total buildings on the current lot where there is only one house now. This was a concern voiced by planning commissioners at the meeting. Second, the steep topography forces all the development into too small of a building envelope. You can't spread it out because of the big hill. It cuts into the hillside, requires substantial retaining walls, removing trees, and paving over the natural landscape. While the applicant may move the house a bit and change the septic plan to run uphill, it still remains that the rock-hard ground in the area leads to major drainage problems every winter. The area is marshy, and even though I am on a flat level area, I have water under my house that has to be pumped out every winter. The survey map dated January 1982 shows the subject property is in Zone C, which indicates areas of minimal flooding. No matter where you pump the septic, everything eventually flows downhill toward the ponds and creek on my property, which then flows across numerous other properties and into Graves Creek and the Salinas River. These waterways are populated by frogs, ducks and their offspring, and snowy egrets. They are also frequented by deer, coyotes, bobcats, foxes, wild turkeys, and numerous species of birds. This subdivision will cause substantial environmental damage and injure wildlife and their habitat. All of these major issues, the character of the neighborhood, the topography, the poor drainage, and the waterways, led to the unanimous denial by the Planning Commission. They are still major issues. As to the previous owners, Patrick and Jamie Carnigan, and their attempt to split the lot, in the records, it seems to show that they used the same survey company as the current applicant, and at the time they tried to split, they wrote me a letter saying that the only way they could split the property was if I sold them 5 feet along my driveway. And since I did not want to do that, they were told they were unable to split the lot at that time. It's been 2 or 3 years maybe since that happened. So I think that's why they never brought it to Planning Commission. They were told they did not have enough property unless they purchased some of mine. So I don't know what's changed between then and now, and it was from the records. Looks like the same survey company. So these major issues still exist, even if you move the house, even if you pump the septic uphill. So I ask that you help us preserve the character of our neighborhood and uphold the Planning Commission's unanimous denial of this development. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Ellison.
My name is Linda Kiltz, and I live at 10275 Santa Ana, right across from the current project. A couple of my concerns are currently all of the residences that are up Santa Ana Road, we all have culverts under our driveway with regards to drainage. And the current owner has proposed, and I'm not sure if it's been approved through the Planning Commission or through the Building Department with regards to him relocating the current driveway into the garage. And he has not put a culvert in. As a matter of fact, he actually has inhibited the drainage if it were to rain a lot down the side of the road. And also, in addition, the current driveway that goes into the existing residence, both sides of the culvert are caved in. I have concerns with regards to if he does not show any respect or regards to the these types of issues, what kind of regard is he going to show to when he does start a development or if he gets the lot split? Another question I would have is it appears that where they have moved the proposed residence on the other plot map, it is a huge proposed residence compared to what the current existing residence is. And I would like to know what the proposed square footage is of the second residence. And again, I guess a concern would be the second units that are now being allowed on 2.5 acre parcels for suburban areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kiltz.
My name is Sherry Hafer, and I live at 10400 Santa Ana Road, which is right next door. And most of the things I was concerned about have already been covered. I want to say that we just really don't feel like this is the nature of Long Valley Ranch. It was really designed to be little ranchettes for your dream house. It's large lots where the house is supposed to be set back. His original property was brought forward by a contractor that put a spec house there, which wasn't the initial intention of the property. It was supposed to be a house set more back. Gordon Davis set 50-foot CCNRs from the front line, and he's already out of accordance to that. And so if it was originally set back where it should have been, we wouldn't even be talking lot split right now. It'd be nice if he fixed that house like he's doing. We are all excited about that, which, although it's taken a long time. And if he wanted to put a granny house back there, that probably would be okay. But he's wanting to put this 3,500 square foot house in a little alley of space, and he wants to put a septic tank uphill from it. He just said he had problems with a little bit of slope that he had for this front house. Now he has it a 30% grade with a septic above that. And so I don't know how that's possibly going to be a good idea. And it's all, to meet that 200 setback, foot setback. But like the neighbors have been saying, the nature of the ground there, it's just all going to drain downhill because he's got a big hill behind him. So it's just going to all go down into the pond no matter what. So I just want to say that pond, I mean, I know he knows it was there because we all ice skated on it last winter when it froze. I mean, there's a big pond there. It drains the whole valley, goes right to that spot. So, I also have a question that, one of the reasons we feel like he put the flag over to the side originally was to meet the size requirements for lot two. It was very tight. He had to meet 3.15. Now he's moved this flag over, you don't have it up there now, to the other side. It looks like lot two is going to be smaller than it originally was, and I'm just wondering, once it goes through the Planning Commission, if it'll even meet the size requirements. And it looks like also if Lena's road, that the flag, there's supposed to be a 5-foot setback from that for her property line, and it looks like his property line is over that 5-foot setback from what I can see, because it actually goes right up against her road. So, and those are my major points. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Hafer.
Hi, my name is Jean Sutton. I live at 10100 Santa Ana Road. I walk my dogs past there every morning at 6:30 in the morning, and as I walk, I see lots of wild turkey and coyote that go right through that piece of property because I'm very aware because I have very small dogs, but it's beautiful. My home is 11 years old. It's one of the newer homes in Santa Ana. And it is not a flag lot. The newer homes are not flag lots. There's two newer homes since mine. So to say that a flag lot's okay because there's some other flag lots there, I think that's looking at some old precedents. The new precedent since then has been lots that that line up on Santa Ana. I don't have to go across anybody else's property to get to mine. I also just want to mention that I know this gentleman is trying very hard, but he is requesting a lot split. And a lot split is different than just saying, I want to build a second home on my one piece of property. The neighbors have assumed when they bought in the area that their property was, they were buying a certain distance from their neighbors, and then to all of a sudden say, we want to now split that lot is very different than saying, we have two lots, now we want to put in a second home. As far as the drainage, if you saw my septic system, you would know it's a real concern out there. When my house was built, they had to put in an engineered septic system that cost about 11 years ago, $20,000. I would hate to know what that would cost today, because the property without major digging and mulchings added doesn't drain. When we first moved in, we tried to plant a tree. We dug a hole. We put water in it to soften the soil. The water was there by the end of the day. There was no percolation. So anyway, those were just the points I wanted to make. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Sutton.
My name is Thad Maziarz. I live two houses away from the project. When we moved here 12 years ago, our big attraction was that this whole area, Long Valley, would be ranchettes. We lived in Orange County. We hated the traffic. We hated the smog. And we came up here and we found Eden, the most beautiful place we could ever imagine. And the best part of it was that we were told by Long Valley that we could not subdivide, and we're on a 7-acre parcel, and we have to dedicate the lower part of that, about four and a half acres, as a tree easement or scenic easement. No splitting, no additional building. And that was what we wanted, and that's what most of us who have lived here for the past, in our case, a dozen years, and in the case of many, longer. But people come up here and live in this area for that very reason, to have a huge lot, so you've got privacy. We have lovely neighbors. We know all of our neighbors because we all have the street front, but our property goes way back, and there are various sizes. My big complaint is not with the minutiae that I see here. Why allow a split? Now, I learned just today that nearby or next door or someplace, there was previously a lot split 20 years ago on a 10-acre parcel. We're not talking about a 10-acre parcel now. We're talking about a much smaller parcel. Somebody from out of town who wants to come in, make a quick buck, split the lot. I am opposed to allowing, never mind all the other things, I am opposed to allowing the lot to be split. That's all I have to say. And boy, how I feel strongly about that.
Thank you, Mr. Maziarz. No second rounds. Anyone else want to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the council. Councilmember O'Malley had a question.
One question for staff. I believe one person mentioned that there were some CC&Rs. Were there some CC&Rs related to this project originally?
There were CC&Rs that were recorded by the Davis family on this area and throughout much of the town. The CC&Rs aren't something that's enforced by the city, so they may be more restrictive than our zoning code. City staff's only allowed to enforce our zoning ordinance, and that's why sometimes you hear about inconsistencies between the CC&Rs and how things get built out there.
But aren't each property, anyone that would purchase a piece of property would be aware of the CC&Rs? Are they deed restricted? Are they tied to the deeds in any way?
Yeah, and the neighbors can enforce the CC&Rs, but the city doesn't enforce the CC&Rs.
But this would be information that any property owner would be aware of when they purchased a property, any existing CC&Rs?
Yes.
Thank you.
One quick question, and that is on page 55 in the minutes. It talks about the motion in the Planning Commission, and it says it was 5-0 at the very bottom of the page 55 of the staff report. That should be 7-0, right?
Correct.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes. In regards to the septic systems, Warren, are not all septic systems engineered in that area?
At a certain point, if they don't have a high enough percolation rate, there's a city requirement for the systems to be engineered. Typically, when we're out in the hills in that area, almost all the systems end up having to be engineered. So there's very few that aren't engineered at this point.
Right, and they have done or are doing perk tests?
Yeah, perk tests have already been done.
Even in this new area?
Yeah, that's part of the requirement for the lot size calculation is to figure out what your percolation rate is.
Okay. And the perk test passed, did they? Or,
well,
as far as you know.
Well, it's not. Let me tell you what they are. So the percolation rates for both lots was 35 minutes per inch, which is actually pretty good.
Pretty good, right. And what's pretty bad?
Anything over 60 minutes per inch is considered the worst-case scenario.
Okay. And then in regards to second units, less than 5% of the people ever take advantage of second units. I know they're thrown out there quite a bit. The square footage on the new home that's been talked about, has there been a proposal?
That hasn't been proposed. What's actually shown on the plans is the building envelope, and that's the building envelope. So they can build a house anywhere within that envelope.
So
but that
that's
doesn't,
not the,
that's doesn't tell not, you how big it is.
Okay. I would agree Long Valley is beautiful and a lot of people want to live there. It's very nice. I guess my concern is that we treat everybody equal. We got a flag lot right alongside. We've got other flag lots. And if they meet all the requirements for a split in regards to the formula, I think it's a fairness issue, and that's my opinion.
I have a question about process here. We really have two questions here, and one is a question on, and they got mixed up because of the revised tentative parcel map. It seems to me it would be cleaner if we decided each of these issues separately. That is, whether we're going to uphold the Planning Commission's decision on the original tentative parcel map, and then secondly, consider whether we should send the revised tentative map back through the process. Is that...
Well, they're pretty much either ors. You can't do both.
Well,
so if you uphold the Planning Commission's decision, then you've denied the project. They can't reapply for a year.
But they could in a year come back with a revised tentative parcel map.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Councilmember Burrell.
I'm getting back to that perk test. Eyeballing it, where they're planning to put the septic system was the expansion field from the first submittal. Is that? And when they do a perk test, they have to do it from each area that they are proposing?
Yeah, typically they do a couple different areas trying to figure out where the best place to locate it, and they put the septic system where they have the best percolation rates is typically how they engineer these things.
So since the expansion area can't be below the 200-foot from the ponds, will they have to do another round of perk test for a second site? Because, the perk test is very important when you're figuring out what size lot has to be. So if that was the best one, if it was an average of three different lots, if we have them go back to Planning Commission and redo perks, it is possible that he wouldn't have the size to accommodate the split?
It's our understanding that they've looked at that. They figured out a way that they can accommodate the leach field and the 100% expansion area. They have to provide both. That's a requirement.
So you don't feel that they will have to do new perk tests, or they will have to do new perk tests?
Well, if they're already in the area that they've perked, then they probably won't have to.
But that would be something that the staff would look at?
That will be part of our review and analysis process.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. Well, I'm not too concerned about the percolation. I am assuming that to get approval, you're going to have engineered reports and that you can verify that a septic system works at some cost, or it could not be approved. Is that correct?
Correct.
I am more concerned about just the drainage of this property, and that's not something that's usually researched as much. And I don't know if our city engineer would have any input on this, but there is some issue of one woman reported water underneath her house. I'm familiar with this area. I kind of miss it all being my motorcycle track from when I was a kid growing up, but there are some drainage issues. Is there a way that would be addressed in the property? I'm concerned that, as one gentleman said, there's some ponds that have existed for a long time, but they're not. Are they on maps or are they not on maps? And would the drainage of the whole property be factored in or considered from an engineering standpoint?
And what we would require in this project, as the earlier speaker talked about, is he would have to calculate the historic drainage flows off the lot. And then his improvements, increasing the or decreasing the permeability of the soil because of hardscapes such as roofs and driveways, they would have to mitigate that with drainage basins so they didn't release any more water off their site as they historically do. And as far as the comments, some of the public speakers talked about erosion control off the existing site. October 15th is coming up. That's when we go out and make sure everybody has their erosion control in place. So we're in the process of going out to all construction sites and making sure their erosion control is in place so that no siltation or debris flows off the site onto other properties.
Okay, well, there's two concerns I have about this particular project. One is the drainage, and I do feel like everyone ought to have an opportunity to present their case. I think there's a lot of information that wasn't presented the first time, but I look at these denials, and I'd have to say, I think it's going to be very difficult to get around the character of the neighborhood issue, and I do agree that there are some areas that were designed to be large parcels. I think this is one of them. I don't think that flag lots are characteristic for this area, and I'm though I could support a review, I'd have to go on the record that I think this neighborhood particularly, and there are others that are already very large parcels, I don't see how you could make the finding that it is consistent with the neighborhood. So that's a concern I have, and I know that's somewhat subjective, but I think that's a tough one for the applicant to try to face, especially with the Planning Commission. And I'm also concerned about drainage issues. I think if it does come back, that would have to be looked at closely.
I would agree with those comments. And just because Atascadero was sort of a boomtown and lots of subdivisions and flag lots were going in everywhere doesn't mean it necessarily has to continue. Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I agree with much of what you said, Councilmember O'Malley. A question, Warren. We can't use the tentative map. That's only for informational purposes, correct? The revised?
Yes, the revised plan is not actually before you. Can't take an action on it. It's
so we can't utilize that then in determining whether to uphold the Planning Commission denial?
Well, no, I don't believe so. What the Planning Commission denied was the other map, and that's if you uphold their denial, you'll be denying that map. If you want to send it back, you'd probably want it sent back to consider this proposed map, which is information, just because you now have new information that the Commission didn't have that you would like them to consider further.
All right, thank you.
Councilmember Burrow.
I think Councilmember O'Malley brings up a good point, is that even though the Planning Commission did have six findings for a denial, if I remember the right number, even with this new plan that's before us, that we're not really considering it, it doesn't satisfy overturning all the findings of the Planning Commission. So I'm leaning towards upholding the Planning Commission decision.
Well, let's hear from Councilmember Clay and then look for a motion.
Okay. First off, a new house makes the neighborhood worth more in a lot of respects. So, you know, to say that a new house is going to tear down the neighborhood is not right. And I was concerned about the cost. You said the city would, if we go with the second, which you know, refer it back, the city is going to incur some costs.
Well, there's a cost of staff just processing these projects. If we send the map back to Planning Commission, we've basically already spent all their money to hear it the first time at Planning Commission, so we'll basically not have any additional fees to cover that staff time. We estimated that's probably between about $1,000 and $2,000 in staff time.
Okay, and then, Warren, you did say that there are a lot of similar acreages, you know, 3-4 acres, so on, in the area.
That's correct.
Right. I think, you know, what we're dealing with here is attitudes. We had an attitude that people have a right to come forward and split their property if they meet all the criteria. It looks to me like they met the criteria. I would hope that we'd go with a second and in saying that, you know, I don't give them much hope with the present Planning Commission that we got. I'll tell you that right now. And but I'm gonna make a motion that we go with second, refer the applicant back to staff and Planning Commission to consider the applicant's revised 10-acre parcel map. This option would require plan checks for code compliance and revision of the Medicaid declaration. So I'd like to see that. I think it's only fair to do that.
Okay, we got a motion to refer the application back to staff and the Planning Commission. This is the second alternative. Is there a second?
I'm going to second it because I'd like them to have the right if they choose to. I personally am also skeptical that this would be supportable. And as I said, I don't think I could make the finding on the consistency, but I'm going to second the motion.
Okay, got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
No.
Mayor Luna?
No.
2-3, motion fails.
So I'm looking for another motion.
Go ahead.
I'd like to make a motion to deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission decision to deny proposed tentative parcel map 2006-0087.
Got a motion to deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission decision. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Councilmember Bureau.
It's a fight.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
I've already said I supported the second one. No.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
4-1, motion passes.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is Plan Development 2006-117 Ridgeway Court Plan Development. I've got a request for a break. Let's make it 8 minutes.
Sounds good.
Is Jerry back there?
Yes. I told him I thought it was a 5-minute break.
Well, it was 8, actually, and that's about 8. Um, Steve, you got a key, don't you? Why don't you? We'll move on to item B2, which is Ridgeway Court Plan Development at 5825 Ridgeway Court. Deputy Community Development Director Steve McCarris will give the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Tonight we have the Ridgeway Court Plan Development. It is plan development number 29, unique to this site only, located at 5825 Ridgeway Court. In brief, the description includes 8 lots with detached residential units on them on a little over 1 acre site. Each new home will have 2-car garage, and lot 1 is the existing colony home, which we'll review in a moment, and this project also includes a master plan of development, which includes all the site development and architectural design standards. The project is located along Rosario and Palma, and also Ridgeway Court, which terminates in a cul-de-sac. I'm just noting the zoning is RMF10, meaning that 10 units to the acre, and the lot being a little over an acre, the base density for this site would calculate at 11 units. However, 8 units are proposed, or 8 lots are proposed tonight. This is an aerial, same exhibit, simply with the aerial orienting you to Palma, Rosario, Ridgeway Court, the historic colony home taking access off of Ridgeway Court. A little bit of background. The project does have a little history with staff and the Planning Commission. Back in July of 06, the Planning Commission had a workshop with the applicant on the project. The applicant had a unique design, as you're going to see tonight, and wanted to discuss setbacks, native trees on the site, and the massing and scale because of the topography of the site, as well as the historic nature of the site and the overall neighborhood. Then the applicant returned, well, after working with staff and coming forward with a proposal, the applicant returned to the Planning Commission in April of 07 this year. The discussions were primarily focused on the Palma Street parking, whether it be on-site or parking be off-site, which we'll discuss this evening. And then they actually continued the item rather than approving it for lack of historic analysis related to historic wall and the colony home itself. Then the Planning Commission had their second hearing, which was their third meeting with the applicant, public meeting, on September 18th of this year. The historic analysis was received and accepted. There was discussion primarily on architectural conditions and detailing of the architecture, which has been incorporated into the project before you tonight, and the project was recommended for approval to you on a 5-2 vote with those conditions. This is the master plan of development, showing the historic colony home, and its access is off of Ridgeway Court, which is located to the top of the screen. And we have Rosario off to the left of your screen with 2 lots on Rosario with 1 access driveway to the 2-car garage on the second lot. First lot would be the colony home lot. Second lot, and then the third lot also takes access off of the shared driveway to the back to a 2-car garage. The third lot is on where the lot 4 is on the corner of Rosario and Palma. And then on Palma are the remaining 4 lots, which are hillside lots, and we'll get into that in a couple slides here. So in terms of appearance review, the applicants spent quite a bit of time in studying the neighborhood and the character of the neighborhood and worked with staff in coming up with designs for the homes that did not mimic the colony home on site, but still incorporated colony home elements and flavors and materials based on the neighborhood and other homes in Atascadero, and came up with these designs. On the Palma, well, what's presented here in this exhibit, the larger colored is one of the units, which represents, although they're not all the same, represents the homes on Palma, which are the hillside homes. So as you see, this home is is pushed back into the hill, so taking access off of Palma in the driveway, and then the most of the livable space is up on the second and third floor. So from the Palma Avenue side, you have a three-story massing on the building. On the back side, it would be in the hill, and you would have a two-story. So that's where you get into the three-story appearance on the Palma. So that takes care of the four houses on Palma. And then the slide or the exhibit below are the homes along Rosario. From the left to right would be up closer to Ridgeway Court, this unit, which took access off that shared driveway, so you don't see a garage. You see only the massing of the home. And then the second unit, midway, again, you see the front of the home. The garage is pushed back. The garage is actually detached out in the back, so that's not visible from the street. And then the corner unit, which does have the garage off of Palma, but not on Rosario. So this elevation is more from Rosario. The just mentioning the architecture, colony-style architecture, primarily craftsmen, not really replicating the colonial revival style of the colony home itself on site, but taking examples of material and color and elements from the surrounding neighborhood. These are the colors. You have a variety of colors that would occur, not necessarily in this massing exhibit, but on the top of the screen here. These are the colors that have been presented to staff for the units, and you see the color palettes in this area here. The below photo simulation is simply not depicting every home on Palma, but gives you an idea of the mass and scale. This is actually lot 7, just duplicated. So the applicant just only went to the expense of just duplicating the one going further than that would have been cost prohibitive. So he's just was showing the massing, the idea of what the appearance would be of those units on Palma. In terms of landscape design, the project does retain many of the oak trees. There's going to be a slide here on the removals that are required, but many of the mature oak trees are preserved. Most of them do relate to the colony lot and closer to the home in the back. There are some trees in the front that are retained. And street trees along the streets and all drought-resistant materials. When we get into this format with the colony home itself, there were a couple key components. Being a colony home, there is an HS district overlay that's included in the project that covers lot 1. The area in the blue dark outline here would be lot 1, and that area would have the HS overlay that would provide additional preservation to the lot in the form of zoning. The colony or the retaining wall that is located along Palma Ave, that's actually located in this lower slide here. This retaining wall, it's failing. Staff and the applicant had looked at it for some time. There's been some engineering analysis of this, and the conclusion is this wall is going to fail at some point, and what could be done with the wall. In terms of the opportunity of placing housing here, the applicant felt he wanted to go forward with housing along the street, and the historic analysis was done to specifically address the wall, what could be done in terms of mitigation if it were to be removed. So the analysis, of course, came to conclusion that it is historic. However, because of the condition of it, the best mitigation would be to try to retain the material on site. So then the Planning Commission spent quite a bit of time in how that would be best done, and there are conditions in here addressing that so that the wall could be dismantled in a professional manner and portions of it could be reassembled in a historically aesthetic and correct manner in key areas of the project site. There was quite a bit of public discussion as well as Planning Commission discussion on where that would occur, and there was concurrence that the corner of Palma and Rosario was an important kind of gateway almost feature to the overall historic nature of the neighborhood, and that would be an excellent location to provide such a low wall. The thought would be it would mimic something, although I don't have the photo here, but something of the character of the entry driveway to the colony home. Those wall features are located at the entry driveway here, which in this photograph would have been to the immediate right and left of the photographer. The second location was at the corner of Ridgeway Court and Rosario, The question was where to place the parking. There was a concept of placing the parking in where these blue areas are. Those were two side-by-side guest spaces between the units. There was also a scenario of one space here with a little bit of landscape, and then a space between where there's landscaping proposed here, a space here and a space here. So in the two alternate scenarios showed parking on site. The third scenario, and that was the preferred scenario by the Planning Commission, was to provide parking across the street. Now, that would be off-site, and that would be public parking, so it would not pertain specifically to the PD. It would just be a condition, and is condition in the project, that the applicant construct the parking in this location or in a similar location across the street. It might not be identical to here, and it would accommodate at least three spaces. Your native tree mitigation is incorporated into the project, as well as the site drainage. The drainage is, rather than doing reservoirs or drainage detention basins, they're all underground storage units, so all this would be hidden from sight. The site drains along Rosario, down Palma. It's picked up in these, and it's released back to the street system at a metered level down at the lower portion of Palma. Project benefits. This project does meet all of your Tier 1 benefits for PD, and it also includes your historic preservation with your HS overlay. Affordable workforce housing is included. This project, with the number of units, would be required to either de-restrict one unit at the moderate level or pay 5% in lieu fees. The workforce housing condition is included. This project, as a PD, does separate the site into what is now three lots into eight lots. And that track map is in your proposal. All the street frontage improvements are included in the project, and CC&R, similar maintenance mechanisms, are also included for all the common areas and those drainage facilities we just discussed. There was a neg deck completed for the project. The Planning Commission does recommend certification of that. The general plan consistency findings are in your staff report. There are a number of them, as well as there are a number of findings for each of the project components, from the mitigated negative declaration to the zoning changes that establish the PD, that provide for the overlay, 29 overlay, as well as the HS overlay on lot 1, your conditional use permit, which is your master plan of development, which we just reviewed, as well as your native tree removal and your tentative tract map. And that does conclude our presentation. The Planning Commission is recommending approval of all elements we've reviewed with you tonight.
Thank you, Steve. Any council questions on this? Oh, yes. Thank you. Let's start with you.
I didn't talk to anyone. I did sit through the Planning Commission meeting entirely and thought they did a good job.
No report?
No ex parte with me?
I just walked the site.
I visited the site, but I haven't talked to anyone about it.
Okay. Thank you. Did you want to start? Councilmember Clay, or
I don't have any questions.
Oh, okay. Councilmember Burrow.
On the big set of plans we had, it didn't have a tree report, so we only had the microscopic one in the 8.5 by 11 sheets. So, can you give me an idea of what percentage of tree removals there are on the site?
Sure, I'm going to refer back to the slide. It wouldn't go through it wouldn't go through the PD process. Of course, it would be at the staff level. But the applicant could be doing attached units. He could do far less architectural features and would potentially be able to still have that lot one. I think the lot one configuration, the way we see it, is acceptable. So what we have left is what the applicant could deal with, and they would be able to do smaller units with larger lots. Now, they would only be able to maybe do a condominium map on those to sell them separately. They wouldn't be able to parcel those lots. So
I was concerned about is why wasn't it a duplex or a quadplex?
It's the applicant's discretion. They wanted to do the single-family lots. Okay. Thus, the PD is required.
And then regarding the parking improvements on Palma, so they're taking out five spaces and they're going to replace it with three spaces?
They're removing four spaces, and it looks like they would be able to accommodate three to four spaces. I said three.
Okay.
A minimum of three spaces.
So are they going to be putting curb and gutter, or what kind of improvements are anticipated for the inside of Palmer?
I'm only going to go so far as that they would need to widen the street, but Public Works Director Steve Kahn might be able to address any additional curb and gutter improvements on the other side of the street.
Can you comment on that, Steve?
Yeah, sure. We've gotten conceptual plans for them for the improvements on the other side of the street. They'll be paving, putting in some berms, and paving out the area right there for three parking spots. And I would just like to note that those will be public parking spots. Anybody can park there at any time, and they can't park over 72 hours without moving their vehicle.
So is it basically the area along the police department fence?
That's correct.
Okay, because I mean, I was thinking of it as a homeowner. You know, I'm standing there, and I just bought this really beautiful house, and I look at this really ugly fence. is there any way we can improve the neighborhood by suggesting that they improve the fence, or is that something the police department has to do, or?
That'd be us.
The city.
The applicant would not be required to improve an off-site property.
So that'd be something you have to negotiate
question,
with the police department.
With the city, yes.
Okay. Some other questions. I noticed that there was a shed that was, didn't look like a historical shed. Is the shed going to be removed?
Yes, the shed is going to be removed.
Okay. And then it mentioned that there's a landscape buffer to the east, on the eastern side of the property. Can you point that out to me, what eastern buffer there is? It's just mentioned in the PD 29 that there's some kind of eastern buffer that the homeowner will have to maintain.
I'm not sure what that would be unless the applicant's aware of something between
okay,
the colony house
the
and the in the development.
Okay, and then you mentioned the drainage facilities. It looked like the drainage facilities were where the parking spaces were going to be. So will that be moved?
No, they're all underground. So the only thing that would be visible would be catch basins at certain locations.
Okay. So there would still be site disturbance to put the basins in, but it may be covered up and re-landscaped. Yeah. All the other project.
Well, I think we might be able to ask the applicant some of these questions since I don't have the details on the fencing. I know that because of the topography, there's those back units, for instance, are actually still lower than the colony home. The colony home does look over those units. That's something we did talk about when we were designing when the applicant was designing the project and was reviewing it with staff. And then there's of course the opportunity for any of that extra historic material, but just the common fences, I think most of this is going to end up being retaining walls and actual earth and landscaping. I'm not sure that there's going to be a whole lot of fencing. There may be a couple key areas, and we can definitely look at that.
Well, I just saw it just said fence locations. I assumed that there was some of them were just major retaining walls.
They are. If I walked you through this slide, for instance, along the street, along Palma, for instance, this is wall, and it's tall enough wall that there's nothing happening behind it. So it's at least 6 feet, and it's retaining earth behind the house. Along the back, I believe this is wall as well, and it's likely retaining wall, I'm pretty sure. So that eliminates that fence. There may be some minor fencing between the units in these locations. And then up in this location, you have almost a shared parking court, which is a shared driveway. Mm-hmm. The back has retaining wall. And so maybe what we might ask the applicant is if there's fencing required over on top of the retaining wall, just for privacy. I'm pretty sure most of this is designed through landscape and those retaining walls themselves.
Do you anticipate any fencing required just for safety? Or is it going to be just not really a usable yard anyway?
So I'm not sure where there's code-required fencing, then if there's code for safety reasons, yes.
And then I was looking at the landscape plan, the trees along Palma. How are those going to be? Because people are always going to try to park along the street, even if we tell them they can't. And I was just looking at they have these little triangles and a circle, which is supposed to be a tree. How is that going to be protected that they don't just get run into all the time?
I'm pretty sure the trees are out in this location. The trees are in the landscaped areas between the buildings. And one of the conditions on this side of the street is that this be a rolled curb and sidewalk. That was partly due to ADA access along the street and along the sidewalk. the ins and outs and the things that were going on before weren't working, so the condition was to roll the curb and place a sidewalk at the back of the rolled curb. That gave enough width for clear ADA access up and down that portion of the street. So I believe all those trees are out along the ones that are in a row there.
Now, I saw the Planning Commission said something about putting the driveway out along the road, and then would that flip-flop where the trees are? Would the trees actually be on the inside of the sidewalk and the sidewalk on the outside?
Wasn't the driveways are out now. If the driveways were in, there was a zigzag problem with the sidewalks. I think the driveways... you're talking about the driveways to the, to the garages.
Well, the location of the sidewalk. I thought I read somewhere that the sidewalk was going to be closest to the street, and that
they're going to do it. I think it might be like Woodridge. I think I'm not totally clear on this one.
Used somewhere on the site.
Yes.
And is it possible that the other retaining walls, if possible, could get some? It's not going to be able to get the same stone, but similar rock work. Would that
the new walls?
Yeah,
The new walls are conditioned to be something that blends in well. So I guess your answer would be yes, but it would not be the of course not the sandstone walls.
Sure, we may be able to hear from the applicant what the plan is on that.
Sure.
And as far as the original Colony home, there are restrictions on what will be done with that in its restoration. It will continue to maintain the character of...
Sure will, and that's part of your HS overlay.
I am concerned in that whole general area with traffic, and that's a complaint I hear from many residents around that area. And I assume we've had a requirement of this project that you'd have to mitigate any increased traffic issues, and that isn't been analyzed at this site.
Well, before I go to Steve Kahn on this, I would say that because it is in the multifamily zone and the density being 10 units per acre, that's the assumption under the general plan EIR for traffic. I think beyond that, Steve might want to address additional trips related to this project.
Sure, and my concern is that really is dependent upon the city making future improvements to some of the roads in this area, or are we going to wait for individual property owners to widen roads as a project comes before their area?
Sure.
Maybe we can have the city engineer just address the traffic issues in general in this neighborhood.
Yes, I'd be happy to. Have 2 points. First of all of these units would have to pay the traffic impact fee, and each of those fee goes into the city fund where we mitigate long-term impacts as identified in the general plan. Second point, this street is currently a one-way street. Just to the south of the property, there is a large oak tree in the right-of-way and a bank that goes in the right-of-way. So currently the road is one-way. We are making sure that in front of this project that there's ability to turn to two-way traffic at some point in the future. And some point in the future, that road may be a two-way road.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Steve, for that presentation. I had a question about the historic wall as well. The wall, the majority of the wall will be disassembled?
All of the wall will be.
Okay.
All of the wall on the frontage of the property. The wall does continue to a neighboring property. That part would not be dealt with.
Okay, and potentially then reassembled on the, what would that be, the north east or northwest corner?
The on-site corner of Rosario and Palma.
Okay. This is perhaps more educational for me, but can a project or... can something like that be conditioned where you would attach some type of a plaque, a historical placard or something like that to signify the historical relevance of the project?
I think that actually came up in discussion but wasn't included in a condition, and it could be.
I know you can't put signage on that. I heard that at the Planning Commission meeting, not signage, but a placard.
That's right. There was discussion about signage, and I think maybe somebody mentioned a placard, but it didn't go anywhere. But, yeah, that could be added, a placard, not as long as we make it clear, was a signage, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
13,
okay. And there wouldn't be any – they would still have to preserve the house.
Yeah, they'd still go through CEQA, so I think most of the historic preservation issues would still be addressed, as well as the wall.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other lights, I'll close it to the council and open it to the public. Is the applicant or the applicant's representative here?
Hello, my name is Jim Beck. I'm one of the applicants. I also live currently in the Colony Home. And I just wanted to kind of speak to the process we've gone through over the last 3 years. I've lived there since 99, and of course we debated the development issue. When I purchased it, because of the price that I purchased it at, I figured the two adjoining lots I would probably have to do something with in order to afford to buy the Colony Home. And if you look at the original configuration, there are two quarter-acre lots along Rosario. Most of the historic wall and the driveway are on those lots, and it kind of was a dilemma. How would you develop these two lots and make multifamily or do something without really killing the integrity? So we kind of went round and round. I called Steve McHarris, didn't know him at the time, and he came out and we walked around. And the premise of that conversation was, you know, how do I build a project that the city is going to want here? How do we preserve the colony yet take care of the density and do what I need to do? And, of course, he laid out that you need to preserve the colony and its historical elements, give it a historical overlay. And as we did that, we realized that the only building zones left over weren't ideal. So we went to work designing something that would preserve the colony lot, which the colony sits on 5/8 of an acre by itself, which was the original colony lot. Then I believe just a little bit later, the other two lots were purchased, but just within years, and they built the really nice walls and did everything they did. So by redesigning the colony's lot, we still have 5/8 of an acre that the colony is sitting on. So we were able to take the half acre and just kind of readjust it, but incorporate all of the historical elements of the upper part of the colony lot. So all the historical walls, the yards, the main landscaping are still on the colony lot. So it really became a better design for the colony itself because it has two adjacent lots that can be sold off, and if those were sold off, it would have destroyed those historical elements. And in a multifamily, that probably would have been a five-unit or whatever it would have been there. And I didn't really want to do that, so we readjusted the colony so that all the historical elements of the colony are on its own lot instead of sharing parcels. And that left us, of course, with the hillside going down Rosario and along Palma. Those areas were chosen, A, they're very low. If you stand up in the backyard, which I think some people came over, you can look over the roofs, and that was important. I didn't want these houses right up on the colony. So they're down pretty far. And we have, of course, the only historical thing that is being removed is the lower wall, which is a beautiful wall, but it's failing. The engineers have looked at it. It is really a major liability. It's a sad fact, but it is a fact. And so removing the wall and reusing it in some sort of monument wall to kind of show as you come up and you can look and see the wall. I also have plans for the stone to create an exit on the colony. You have an entry wall, and as you come around the drive around the little cottage house, I wanted to use the stone over there and do something to highlight the rest of the colony. And we did then design all of those aspects into the project and got them all in. We didn't leave one thing out. So then we came back for the planning. Everything went fantastic. They wanted a historical report, which we didn't have, mainly because they knew the wall was failing, but they wanted to know the history and the history of the rest of the project. So we did the historical report, which is a nice document. You've probably read it. And at that time, we did some more analysis from a soils engineer just to make sure that we were on the right track with the failure of the wall and the statements that were made. And that came back affirmative. And I believe in the historical report, they had suggested that the wall be relocated and reused just to preserve the history of the wall. So we did that. Then we had some issues with a few comments about architecture, whether the designs were what everyone wanted or what they liked. All the elements that we had in the elevations were from the study group. They were, we don't want cookie cutter. We don't want them looking the same. Bring in different elements so that we're not, you know, building the same house over and over. So we did that. And I think it really then comes down to a matter of taste of which historical elements you like. I mean, we could redesign forever to match each person's taste. So we do have some nice historical elements in all of the homes. We've chosen to do that just to complement the colony because we know we're next to it. And I think it is superior to my alternatives, which, you know, frankly, are an apartment building or some multifamily, which I don't think would really do justice to the colony home. I think development is inevitable with the additional two lots that are there with the high density that's there. So I think we've done a fantastic job on this project. We've gone through a lot of phases, spending a lot of time and money to get to this point. We've listened to the community and the study group and actually incorporated all of those elements. And so I think we're bringing a very, very strong, nice project to the area, and I think it's superior to what anybody would design for this project. We've put a lot of thought into it. And so I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. I think we have some Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for bringing your project before us. You heard me mention the issue of the potential a placard to designate the historical significance. I think that would possibly add to the value of your property. Would you be receptive to something like that?
Yeah, I would. We actually have a small plaque that was given to us from the Historical Society. I think it's the O'Connor House. Just highlighting who originally built it and so on and so forth. I don't think anybody wants a large sign because that was a concern. They said no signs.
Right.
But, I think a nice brass placard would be very tasteful for somebody walking by, could read it, and you know, he could say something informative.
I think it
would
be good for our city as well as your project. Yeah. The other issue was you heard my colleague mention the issue of the fence across the street at the police department. And would you be receptive to an improvement there? Which would also enhance, I would imagine, enhance the sale of your property.
Obviously, it's a very commercial looking fence across the street. So anything's possible. There's landscaping, but then there's a water issue. There's fencing. It all depends on what's proposed. If it's feasible, sure. I mean, we don't want it to look poor. So
thank you.
You know, it could be just slats, or the fence itself could probably be improved just to look better.
Councilmember Barreau.
Steve, could you pull up the site plan? Can you give us an idea of the height of some of those retaining walls that are proposed in the project?
It was around the 4-foot mark with a slope going back up to where the colony, a little flat yard, is. So it would go down, I don't know, it's like 15 feet, then a wall, 6 feet to the house, and then you have flat around to another wall. And it just kind of it's better, in my opinion, to stair step down and do some landscaping with the draping plants, and to just kind of blend it in was kind of the theory. So we've kind of eliminated high walls.
So the one continuous wall in the back, especially along Palma, you said that's about maybe 6 feet? Is that what I understood?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so about 6 feet. And you're planning to do landscaping too?
Yes. So, and we chose to do just one long meandering wall instead of a bunch of little short choppy things. That way we can kind of just get some continuity between them.
Is that going to be like Allen block or something?
That probably can't be. It probably has to be standard, regular block that's mortared in, just because of the engineering things. But obviously, once we get engineering, the materials will evolve, and we'll have to talk to Steve and Kelly and what's acceptable for how it looks.
Okay, and then Steve mentioned that you had taken into the account the height of the homes and the view from the Colony House. So you don't anticipate that the houses will block the view from the Colony House?
No, I don't. Well, first of all, there's a lot of trees there. Of course, some of those trees will be gone. And four of the trees, I think, that are being removed are little toyon bushes. They're not little, but they're little toyons. The rest, I think there's another four or five actual oaks. And two of those are very aging oaks, and the point was in the study group was to get those out and get in healthier trees so that it prospers in the future. And I remember walking it with Joan O'Keefe, and that was one of her concerns initially before the study group was these houses. And when you stand in the backyard, the roofs of the neighbors just below that are two small lots are significantly lower than where the fountain is. I don't know who's been out there. Mm-hmm. So in my – obviously, I can't say with all certainty because the houses aren't there, but you should be able to see over, and I think you're just going to miss the view of the freeway, but you'll still have the mountain and the scenery above it. So,
okay, thank you.
Did you want to ask about that landscape buffer at the east?
Oh, yeah, thank you. It says in the PD 29 language that there's some kind of there's a eastern landscape buffer on the property. You don't know where that is?
No, it's the first time I've heard it. So,
the eastern side is
this side, the upper side on the photograph there. That is the east. There's about 30 feet between the colony home and the neighbor. Obviously, there would be nothing built in there.
But so I guess it's just to maintain it.
There's no official.
I don't know if you want to look at that, Steve, just what the language says, but maybe it was just the intention that landscape buffer be maintained as a landscape buffer versus building new structures, maybe.
Maybe you could give us what mitigation number that is?
It's, It's actually the language of the PD 29. I forget what page that's on. It's page 131. Actually, it goes on to page 132. It says, buffer landscaping along the eastern property line shall be maintained by the individual property owners into perpetuity.
Can't condition other property without the nexus requirement being met, and it's not available on this project.
Thank you. The other thought was, too, is I think there are a number of veneer products that are available. We certainly need a engineered wall that will be structurally sound, but I know there's a lot of veneer options, and there's also a lot of native stone, you know, go up the street to Sanford Stone and others of, and Kritz, for example, has a lot of native sandstone, but it'd be nice to consider getting something that would be similar, and I think that's something that could be looked at in the design requirements. I'm concerned about looking at placards and monument signs, just because I know in other communities, one thing I was involved with Tier 1 and Tier 2 benefits was to make things as predictable as we can for folks coming forward, and I think it's a good idea, but I think it might be good to have a little more thought given to that of maybe through Main Street or the Historical Society to come up with some ideas that might be standardized, that then any place that's historical, you know, we might have something that ties them together, much like Councilwoman Bayrou looked at for monumenting trails or like we did in our monument signs around town. There's a consistency to, you know, colony areas. And so maybe do we have a standard that would this could be applied to, or is that something we might need some input on?
We don't have a standard. And, in fact, my experience with other cities is that there are not standards. You go city to city and find these plaques. I think the one thing we find in common is that they're typically brass. They're cast in brass. There's a few companies that make these signs, but they do vary in size and shape depending on where they're going, what they're applied to, and what kind of story you're telling.
It's good to tell a story. I think that answers my...
Councilmember Clay.
Yes. You know, I know the applicant wants to get this approved, but agreeing to fix the city police fence is just not right. And, you know, I don't think that's even proper thing to do at all. And as far as views go, someone a lot smarter than me showed me how views work. And I'll give you an example, the Carlton Hotel. If you look down, the view's not too good. But if you look out, you have this beautiful west side or so on. So it kind of depends where you want to look, whether the view is good, bad, or indifferent. And, but anyway, I think you've tried to satisfy everybody. And as far as the police fence goes, why, you know, if we wanted to plant some ivy or something like that, why, it would cover that up in a hurry. But it's certainly not your responsibility.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Beck. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on this item? Ms. Maggie?
I'm Marge Mackey, and I live on Tinitas. I continue to be concerned about the rampant growth in our part of town. Tonight I'm here to plead with you to deny or reduce the project on Ridgeway. These classic colony homes should not be devastated by PUDs. I admit I probably should have asked for this protection long ago, but probably it would not have been any more successful than I will be tonight. I can see how this property could be used by one or two new houses, but seven is overkill. They should never have been zoned for this density. Your staff report says proposed zone change will not create any new significant avoidable impacts on traffic, infrastructure, or public service impact. I would suggest that you will probably need a signal light at Rosario and El Camino when this project and the Rabat projects are completed. Those projects will add 15 new housing units. Last week, I was one of seven cars waiting to get onto El Camino behind a school bus. In the last 2 years, we have added 13 new houses in the two blocks using Rosario as their access. At some point, it does cause an impact. I was on the council when we voted for PUDs. We were told that it would give the council more control over projects, but we certainly did not foresee, at least I didn't, the time when a little over an acre would be divided into eight two-story houses such as this. I hope you will reduce the density of this project. It has a for sale sign, so the present owners do not plan on contending with the impacts caused by the development, but I will. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. And
with that police fence, I've been complaining silently for years about that police fence. It is a hazard to have all that, you know, that whole corner. You can't see around that corner. And I don't think that putting ivy on it's not going to help a bit to see. Isn't there anything you can do about that, Steve?
Just please address the council, March. Okay. You know that. Thank you, Ms. Mackey.
My name is Ron Rothman. I live in Atascadero, and I just had one question. What is the square footage of the lots that these homes are going to be built on?
Do you have that offhand, Steve?
The smallest lot is a little over 3,100 square feet, and the Colony home is approximately half-acre lot size.
I think it was 5/8. Okay, anyone else want to speak on this item? I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council. One of the things Ms. Mackey brought up was about the zoning, and that's, although I've been on the council a long time, that's it's not under my control, and I would agree with her about the density. However, this is a planned development, and this is, I think, a much better project than you would get if it was done at the staff level as an RMF 10, where you could potentially have it with a density bonus 13 units. So I think this is probably better than we could expect.
And, you know, with this kind of density, and it kind of mirrors what Marge is talking about, that with this kind of density, it is a conflict with our tree ordinance. If you're removing 50% of the trees on the lot, this is not, in my mind, an effort to not be in conflict. Then looking at page 112, the cultural resources, and this is looking at the historic element. And this is 5A, causes substantial adverse change in the significance of the historical resource. And in my mind, you know, it says no impact at all. I think, you know, the situation of the Colony home in relationship to the community is significant. And when we looked at another project, Greg Rivott's project further down in Rosario, all those homes that he planned for his planned development all had more architectural details. There was stamped pavers. There was a lot of detail put into that project. And when I reviewed the language for the PD 29, and that's on page 131, it just says appearance must be, let me look at it. It's letter D. Appearance of each dwelling unit, site landscaping, site development, and amenities shall be consistent with the Atascadero Appearance Review Manual. So it makes no reference whatsoever to the drawings that we were seeing tonight. And the reason I have concern is when I saw the for sale sign, that means, of course, that the property can be sold. And it may never get built to what we see tonight. And I do believe that Mr. Beck has made a good, you know, good faith effort to come up with homes that have some historical features. But you know, according to the language in the PD-29, we have absolutely no guarantee that that is what will be built. I don't know if staff will comment on that to reassure me otherwise, but that is a concern of mine.
Yeah, why don't we get some input from staff on that?
Sure. On the PD language, well, what you'd be approving is that conditional use permit, which would be the following. That locks in your site plan, all your amenities, everything that's in your exhibits. You are assured you will receive when the project is built. Staff will plan check the proposed building drawings and plans to the plans you have before you, as well as your conditions of approval and your mitigation measures.
Okay, thank you for that. And then when I looked at the historical elements, you know, that we're trying to be compatible with the colony homes in the area, I was concerned that there was not a certified architect on the drawings. And I believe that to really have a good follow-through that we should have the right professionals doing the drawings. Then also on the conditional use permit, on page 76, we have to make a finding, number 4, that the proposed project or use will not be inconsistent with the character of the immediate neighborhood. And one of the qualifications of a PD is the high-quality architecture. And I do appreciate the fact that we do have different elevations for each house, but again, I don't see that it's in my
comment in hopes that, well, with the understanding that it would probably significantly enhance the value of your property for people that have to look directly across the street, across Palma, at that fence, which is not a pretty sight. So,
Councilmember O'Malley.
Thank you. Well, I could agree with some of the points raised by Councilwoman Bayrou in terms of I like to see high-quality projects. I'd like to mandate that Steve McHarris has to approve everything, but yeah, I don't know if we can just do that. He doesn't want to do that. I do appreciate your input on design. However, the time to do that is, I think, more as we've done in the past, looking at the different benefit requirements so that things are predictable. I don't like redesigning a project on the spot, but I would support raising the bar as I did before with landscape buffers and architectural detail, and I think it's something you look at across the board so everyone gets the same message and it's predictable. With that, I'm prepared to make a motion that we adopt Planning Commission recommendation.
I'll second that motion, and in doing that, I'd say this is an infill project. They've studied it to death. He's tried to do everything that he was asked to do, and it's smart growth. It's right within our core. It's within walking distance of our downtown that we're focusing on so much, so that's with my second.
So I got a motion by Councilmember O'Malley, a second by Councilmember Clay, that the council adopt the Planning Commission recommendation on page 67. Any discussion?
Would you be willing to amend your motion to include that a qualified architect be involved in the plans?
I don't feel a need. Could I have a comment from Mr. McHarris on that?
Sure, thank you. Just to clarify it so everybody knows, when these drawings come to us at this stage, they're really considered conceptual drawings. They're not the working drawings, so the working drawings will come to us at the architectural level that you're looking for, and that's what staff will just be applying those conceptual drawings to the building permits, which will be prepared by an architect.
Thank you for that clarification.
Then it's not needed.
Any other discussion? Mayor Pro Tem Brennan.
Would you entertain adding the condition about the historical placard? I think it really enhances the value of not only to the city but to the property.
Let me ask this. I could support that. Is staff prepared to process that or assist an applicant with that?
Sure, we can work with that. I think what staff would look for is a brass placard to be applied. It sounded like on one of the stone elements that will be recreated on the site.
Would that be at the corner?
At the corner.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just clarify that it's at the corner, and it reflect, I'm not sure what you want it to reflect. It would probably be something out of the historic analysis of the site.
What I would suggest is if you could come up with two or three possible vendors that could provide something, let the applicant choose that, provide some parameters that might come back to council. I would let staff work this out with the applicant and support that, but I would like to see something come back to council with some general idea on this, and I would just suggest something of a
historical... You don't
historical,
want this to come back?
Yeah, no. 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 So. But in the future, in general.
In the future.
So I think what he's talking about is a model, and taking this as a model in line adjustment at 6305 Morrow Road. Steve McCarris, or is it Steve Kahn?
Yes, I have. Oh, okay. So I just need to bring the presentation up.
Deputy Community Development Director Steve McCarris will give the staff report.
Thank you. Okay, yes, before us tonight is the road abandonment and lot line adjustment for 6305 Morrow Road. Well, that's related to the project before us. The project is located adjacent to the Tesoro service station along Morrow Road and Marchant, as well as U.S. Highway 101. The site area in question is about 4,130 square feet, and it is within... technically within the existing Marchant right-of-way. This is a photograph to the south, showing the southbound on-ramp to US 101 off of Morrow Road, as well as Marchant Road, Morrow Road, and the Tesoro service station. The area in red is the approximate location of the abandonment site. A little bit of background, that the Marchant currently is planned for closure between Morrow Road and Tecarita. The site is currently under Caltrans plan to fully landscape the site with a lighted pedestrian paseo or sidewalk. This is the site plan or the landscape plan from Caltrans showing the area. Marchant is located here and would be closed off, landscaped with a sidewalk meandering through it. In October of 2006, the applicant had offered to enter into a license agreement with the city to construct and maintain the landscaping, which Caltrans is currently doing, but also offered to maintain the landscape, which Caltrans would not. When Caltrans is finished with their landscape, they would turn over to the city, and it would be at the city's expense to maintain this area. So the applicant had offered to maintain it in return for the abandonment, and a license agreement was considered at that point in time. That would accommodate the expansion of his single car wash to add a second bay for two car wash facilities. In February of this year, the council approved the wayfinding program, which identified a monument sign located in this area. So there's a slight modification to what would happen, but the pedestrian sidewalk would just be able to continue around the site. And that's something staff has been working with Caltrans to accommodate. The description update at this point is there is no license agreement from the applicant's viewpoint. There is no landscape or maintenance of the remaining Marchant closure area from the applicant. However, the applicant is still asking for the abandonment of the area, which is actually the back of the sidewalk and no more. So it's the landscaped planter area, not the area that's being traveled by pedestrian or vehicles. The expansion of the car wash is still the applicant's intention, as well as expanding some of his circulation and parking. And then the applicant would re-landscape his edge if this were approved and he were able to construct his facilities. At the Planning Commission hearing of September 18th of this year, there was a 7-0 vote to recommend approval of this with the payment of the land since the landscape maintenance was off the table.
Roshan?
Yeah, could you show that picture that you had earlier of what the site actually looks like? It was a real picture I thought you had that, yes. So basically the street portion back there will be what's abandoned. And so the owner of the car wash would take over that street portion, and is the city going to restore that street to its natural, or is the applicant, or what's going to happen with that?
Let me try to walk you through it again with the photograph on the screen here.
Thank you.
What happens is, at this point in time, Caltrans, with their improvement program, is going to close this section of Marchant between Tecarita and Morrow Road. And then they're going to, when this is finished, this area will be landscaped with this sidewalk removed and a new meandering sidewalk with low pedestrian lighting and trees. And then with your wayfinding approval, a monument sign would be located just about here, so when you're exiting off the freeway, it would be highly visible. It's a rather large sign.
So the city will be doing the sign. Will Caltrans be removing the road and doing the landscaping then?
Yes, correct. But the portion about the maintenance has, as of now, when Caltrans is done, the maintenance will, the project, the area will be accepted back to the city, and the city will maintain that landscaped area. Your license agreement that came to you a year or more ago was for the Tesoro station's request was to take a piece of the property in this location in exchange, rather than buying or paying for, in exchange, would maintain the landscape, because it was his interest to have a nicely maintained landscape, and then in return he would be able to expand his car wash facility. So that's where we left off over a year ago with you. Now we're here before you tonight with... He still wants to do the gas station part of it, but he doesn't want to maintain the landscape, so the city would be maintaining the landscape.
And it was considered, at this point, it's recommended that we seek payment for that. Was it still a possibility that we not seek payment and the landscape be maintained? Was that an option?
That would be up to the city and the applicant. The applicant, I believe, approached the city with that scenario, but he's withdrawn that.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes. So I got a couple things in regards to car washes. Is that money taxed? Is the money that they pay maybe? Is it a tax? It is taxable. Okay, I see. Okay, that's great. And then in regards to precedents, I know when Dr. Burbick had a paper road that went. Alongside his property or through his property or something to that effect, and we abandoned that road and we did not charge him anything for the property. So in some respects, I think we've set a precedence there that that in the past we have not charged people for the abandonment of roads.
Councilmember Burrow.
Just regarding that, didn't we do a road abandonment also for the hotel at California Meridian? I think we made them pay. Does anybody remember that one?
No, you eliminated that requirement.
The payment part?
They did not have to pay for that.
And then, so the applicant does not want to maintain, and you said something about the sidewalk is going to remain or the sidewalk would be taken out.
Well, because so many things are going on, in the ultimate scenario, that sidewalk will go away. But in the meantime, that sidewalk stays. So the best way to, and what's legally happening here now, is the area that the applicant would like is the back of the sidewalk. So you can go out and see it. You can see it in the photograph, and that's what's depicted in all his exhibits. Because the main reason is because it was not used as a thoroughfare. The landscaped area, so it really wasn't needed or required for access by state law. So that area is allowed to be abandoned. The area of the sidewalk and the street is not allowed to be abandoned at this time. It wouldn't be so for 5 years because state law requires that to be closed and not needed for public access for 5 years. That's why we're dealing with the back of sidewalk only.
So Caltrans will take out the sidewalk when they redo that road?
Yes, Caltrans is going to replace that sidewalk with, okay. The idea was landscaping and a new pathway.
Okay, got it.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
Yes, Steve, what type of landscaping maintenance costs will the city incur then annually? Do we have any idea?
I don't have a figure. Maybe Public Director Steve Kahn might have a figure.
We've not done a cost estimate yet on that landscaping. Well, what would be? It'd be irrigation and staff keeping the weeds down, keeping the plants alive. I will note that that area does not propose to be landscaped till the end of the project, which is approximately 3 years down the road. So existing asphalt and sidewalk will remain probably until then. And then at that time, landscape contractor will come in and put in the landscaping, and they have a warranty period with Caltrans for 3 years to make sure the planting looks attractive and stays landscaped. So the city would look at starting to maintain that probably 5 plus or minus years out.
Thank you.
Steve, just a quick question. The CT zone has a zero-foot setback?
That's correct.
So what would be the setback from the sidewalk to the proposed...
I'll give you one guess. It's zero.
It's zero. Yeah. Okay.
I should back up. I think there was a roof overhang issue with the structure, so I think the last time I saw a set of drawings, the building might have been a couple feet back to accommodate the roof overhang, so it did not cross the property line. Really depends on the structure, but it could be built to the property line.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Clay?
Yeah, Steve, you're saying that where those red marks is, he's only coming out to the edge of the sidewalk?
Yeah, so what will happen is because there's a little slope there, he'll have to fill it out, the car wash itself will probably have a little bit of retaining wall at the lower portion of it. But it will come up to the very close to the edge of sidewalk, could come up to the very edge.
And he could do that, like, right away?
After this is approved, he couldn't do this till the lot line was changed, adjusted, and the abandonment occurred.
Okay, but, I mean, he doesn't have to wait for Caltrans to remove the sidewalk and road, so...
No, he wouldn't be affecting the sidewalk or the road.
So what are we... In other words, Caltrans property goes in a ways, then, is what you're saying. The right-of-way.
The right-of-way goes from the back of the sidewalk all the way across the street to the on-ramp landscaping there.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Councilmember O'Malley.
We have some non-tax-producing property, and we'll be paying for the landscape maintenance after 5 years anyway. Is that correct? Caltrans will put in some landscaping, and there's some guarantee period after which the city will be paying to maintain them.
Maybe Steve Kahn might need to weigh in on this, because I'm not sure what happens ultimately once landscaping is turned over from Caltrans in terms of that landscape edge you're referring to.
Okay.
The city would be responsible for landscape maintenance on the roadway portion of where Marchant Road is. So like I said earlier, 3 years from now, something like that, Caltrans will be landscaping that. And then after their landscape maintenance period is up, we would be maintaining it. Where the sidewalk is being removed, the existing sidewalk, Caltrans will also be landscaping that area. Where their plans do not cover is there is a small area in between the back of sidewalk and Tesoro's property line that is not covered by Caltrans landscape plan or currently required by the owner of Tesoro gas station to landscape or maintain. What happened when US 101 was built in the 50s? Large parcels of land were cut off to build US 101. Marchant was realigned, and that little piece of property in between the gas station and the back of the sidewalk existing on Marchant ended up being a little remainder piece of the US 101 interchange project. US 101 project.
Thank you. So that property would not be landscaped anyway. It would simply be a little strip of city property that we would maintain liability insurance on, and it would not generate any revenue?
That is correct.
So our option is to allow some commercial use of that property, and then it would generate revenue. It would be part of the tax rolls, and any income would be taxable off of that commercial enterprise. Is that what I understand?
Yes, your option is to allow that, and then your question would be if you wanted to allow that at no cost on the property.
Well, it sounds like we're either going to allow income to be generated or not, is what we're going to be deciding tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
Councilmember Clay.
I'm even hearing a little further. So if we do not allow the property owner to obtain that property, we're going to have to maintain it and we're going to have to landscape it. Caltrans isn't going to landscape it. Is that right?
Yes, I think that what's happening is the Planning Commission is recommending that you approve this, and I think their only position is that the value of the property be reimbursed to the city. That was the only thing that they were forwarding to you. So that they are recommending approval. Staff did recommend the same approval to the Planning Commission.
And they added the cost.
No, that was actually that staff's position on all of these. It's a standard position.
Here's what I'm trying to say, Steve. Caltrans is not going to landscape that piece, right?
No.
I mean?
Correct. It's already landscaped.
It's already landscaped?
Yes, it's the landscaped area you see in the photograph there.
Okay. Yeah. So,
it just remains the same.
We just have to maintain it. I see. Okay.
Mayor Pro Tem Brenner.
Steve, do you have any idea what type of revenues are we talking about here?
He wanted his buildings and his improvements to encroach into the Marchant right-of-way, not just behind the back of sidewalk, but all the way into the Marchant right-of-way. So now he's not proposing to encroach into the Marchant right-of-way. He's just proposing to construct to the back of sidewalk and wants to do an abandonment of that small piece of property.
Okay, but the city will incur the expense for maintaining the landscaping
in the Marchant right-of-way.
Near future. Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Barreau.
If it's okay with you, I'm ready to make a motion.
Oh, we haven't opened it to the public.
Oh, yes.
Councilmember O'Malley, you have another question?
Yeah, and I think, to be clear, what's different is we thought we could negotiate the portion of the street property, but it's now clear that we cannot give that up for 5-year period. So it's a different deal on the table, basically. The applicant is now not being offered into the street. That will come up for discussion in 5 years. He's only being offered on the back side of the sidewalk, and so the proposal is different on both sides.
Well, there's a difference. The original agreement was a license agreement, so he would own nothing in fee. He'd have an agreement with the city of Atascadero. We had it written up, and he would have a license to occupy a portion of Marchant.
But that's moot.
But that's moot now. And so now he just wants to take ownership of that small portion behind the sidewalk and own it in fee and build his car wash on it.
Before we go any further, let's do ex parte. I apologize for forgetting that. Councilmember Clay?
I haven't talked to anybody.
Councilmember O'Malley?
I've heard from, I believe, the applicant and a number of members of business community some time ago when this first proposal came up.
Okay. I have none. Mayor Pro Tem Brenner?
I was at the site, that's all.
I don't have any.
Okay. Okay, seeing no other lights here, Mr. Giesinger, you want to open it to the public?
Hi, Don Giesinger, the owner of the property. To help clarify something, I can see that the strips that we're talking about is what I've been maintaining landscape now when you go out there. Now, what that is was the property like Steve was talking about that should have been, that was abandoned years ago back in 1954. When I bought the property, even the realtor thought I owned to the sidewalk. Only afterwards in the planning development that we realized there's with these two strips. So the city back 6 years ago said, go ahead and build your station. Keep your main structures off of that. Do the parking out there a little bit. Landscaping and such, et cetera. But because of Caltrans, not knowing, they were thinking at one point they might go down Marchant and go onto the freeway, that I wasn't going to be a glitch in the process. So let's, because I had a road abandonment in 6 years ago, but we thought, well, let's wait and see exactly what Caltrans is going to do, which I respected that opinion, thinking I don't want to be a part of that problem. Now, so to clarify it, where the sidewalk is now, I've been maintaining those strips now for 6 years with landscaping and et cetera. So what I was proposing, so I think you understand that a little bit now, that the original agreement was that I was going to build the car wash out on Marchant a little bit and maintain it and do Caltrans work. Of course, two things happened. Caltrans was a huge delay, another year in the process, which didn't help matters. And then secondly, they're closing down the road to one lane, so we knew that it was maybe a huge financial impact. And now Steve Warren said, I can't build over on that. I got to stay over on the other side of the sidewalk. So that's why it changed. Just for, you know, as this thing develops, probably what I'll do with Granite and with Steve and Warren is I would like to see that get landscaped and looking nice as soon as possible. And so what I'll do is probably come in and exercise that agreement. That agreement is not technically dead in the water. The agreement states that we're supposed to get it done by the end of Caltrans process. So we could probably redo that if Granite can work with me and say, you know, I'll get in there and do some landscaping. Caltrans landscaping is fairly minimal. And I would be a benefit for me to get in there and make it look a little bit nicer than sitting there waiting 3 years before they do it. And then I could supply the water to the city and also the electricity for that sign. So that's something I think would come down the road, which will be a benefit for everybody. But for now, we just need to legally get this lot line adjustment so I could technically build over on the new sidewalk, up to that corner of the sidewalk, which, like Steve said, was going back in 54. It actually could have been done. Well, a little quick story with that. San Luis Obispo took over that property. He relinquished it to Atascadero. The gas station was built in that right in that same time, that old gas station, and they turned around and just nothing got done. Sidewalk was put in. They were going to do something on Tecorita because it was narrow, but we wanted to keep the sycamore trees. And that's kind of why it never got done, because when my finished my project, my survey guy says, someday when you get a chance, you should probably go do a lot line adjustment. Not for me, but for the future person down the road to clean it up and, you know, make it so everybody understands it. Because it did get a little confusing with the strips and everything. So, but anyway, you have any questions I could answer for you?
Any questions for Mr. Giesinger?
Just one.
Councilmember
Clinton. Yeah, so down the road, you said you would possibly maintain the Caltrans portion and also electricity to the sign.
Yeah.
And then would you want an additional, or you just want to make it pretty, or you?
Well, you know, what I'd want is, you know how it's a Mandarin sidewalk out there?
Right.
Okay. If everything works out well, then what I could do is expand my parking a little bit, maybe like 15 feet out to the new sidewalk, let's say.
I see.
And with that consideration, we could do agreement and then take over the landscaping. And
we'd have to cross that bridge.
Yeah, we just would cross that bridge and we get
there.
Thank you, Mr. Giesinger.
Anything else? No?
I think that's it.
Okay.
A lot of bad things happened in 1954. Anyone else in the public want to speak on this? Seeing none, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council, and ask for a motion.
I move Planning Commission's recommendation striking number 3.
I'll second that motion.
It's what, a tenth of an acre? I mean, it's just a small amount. I don't think it's worth doing the
same
calculations.
Problem we had before. Try to put it on the market and sell it. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, well, you can't. But I think I understand the intent of the Planning Commission, but it's such a small amount. I'm not sure if it's.
Yeah. I agree.
If it's necessary, but
I think the time to negotiate is when we can deal with that whole Marchant Street area, and that's when we could.
Yeah. Well, I think what I would like to see, if we're going to go down that road of seeking market compensation for abandonments of rights of way, that we set some kind of policy so everybody, you know, minimum size or whatever, so that people know what they're getting into.
Good suggestion.
But I think at this particular point, I will support the motion.
Okay. I call the question.
The question.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Councilmember Barreau.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler.
No.
Mayor Luna.
Yes.
4-1, motion passes.
Okay. So we'll move on to management reports. Proposition 1B, application for proposed Atascadero Transit Center. Public Works Director Steve Kahn.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just waiting for the PowerPoint to put up here.
That's okay. I fell asleep for a second.
Thank you. Tonight we're going to be talking about the Transit Center and the proposed 1B funding. First question is, what is a Transit Center? Well, a Transit Center is a centrally located facility that buses, commuters, bicycles, and pedestrians all meet and get on other modes of transportation. And I've just got a few pictures here of some examples of transit centers because I want to quench the theory that it's an old, you know, 8-bay bus barn with 8 buses spewing smoke. So here's San Luis Obispo's facility. Notice the shelters and the water fountains and the paving and the landscaping. Then here's Ventura's, a little wild. I haven't quite figured out what that one is. Here's Mountain Views. It's very nice. Nice shelter is located on a street corner there with the nice decorative lights and the garbage cans. Then here's Palo Alto's. Nice landscaping and some shelters set back, kind of nondescript. And then here we have Santa Paula's, again, with landscaping and a bus pulling up near a shelter. So those are just a few examples. But what a transit center really is, it's a multimodal transportation facility, and the things that it typically provides is shelter out of the rain and out of the sun. It also provides information. Typically, these type of places have kiosks with not only bus schedules and things like that, but they also could advertise community events or certain things that are happening. Bathrooms. We did a survey, and one of the big things at a transit center is to have a bathroom there for the ability of the public to use the facilities. Bicycle rentals. It's a multimodal facility, so perhaps there's an opportunity for someone to rent a bike there and drive around downtown Atascadero. Food and drink. It's good to mix these uses, have some sort of a drink facility or restaurant facility where someone can get a sandwich or a soda. It could also add to the security of the site because you have a presence of people. We look for suggested sites. First of all, ourselves and RRM and Fair and Pierce Design Consultants drove all over Atascadero looking for sites, asking people where they thought site should be, talking to people. We'll also at the workshop, we asked the workshop participants about what they thought sites were. Then we went and looked at transportation operations. Obviously, if we're going to meet with Atascadero Transit and with RTA Route 9, with perhaps Greyhound or any other service, you'd certainly want to take a look at commingling those operations. So we've talked extensively with the RTA about what their operations are and get them involved in the process so the site that we do select does work. And finally, we discussed park and ride. It's extremely important. We have a large amount of people in this community that work in Paso Robles, that work in San Luis Obispo, and do use park and ride facilities. So that was another part of our discussion. And a part of the discussion was also, it's nice to have park and ride facilities if the center is in downtown, but you don't want too much parking that's for park and ride to take and impact the downtown. So there was discussion about having actually two locations where park and ride could be picked up, one in the downtown center, another more of an outlying facility where more people could park. Workshop two, suggested sites were explored and ranked, and five sites were identified and voted on by the workshop people to go further on the process. All the sites that were selected were within a quarter mile of downtown Atascadero, as delineated by the Sunken Gardens Fountain, which I thought was interesting. And we also did a survey of the people at the workshop in order to find out what amenities they thought they would want at the site. And also we did a survey on Route 9 to find out what amenities they wanted and also where did they come from, what facilities did they need, what location would they prefer. So we used that information. And just here's a quick slide showing the amenities that was done at the workshop. Shelter was number one, ease of access, and you can see the rest of the list. And the same thing with the Route 9 passengers. Here's their list of preferences and what they wanted, bathrooms, bike facilities, et cetera. So the next step in the study is we're going to take three sites and we're going to explore them further. We're going to take layouts. We're going to look at how they operate, how to be constructed, take a look at cost estimates. Then we'll bring that to another public workshop where we'll discuss the three sites and talk about them. And finally, we'll bring a preferred site back to the City Council to take a look at what the City Council thinks about it. So, in conclusion, SLOCOG, with the state of California, has $12.5 million of 1B funding. That's the funding from Governor Schwarzenegger's initiatives. And SLOCOG, the city staff, and RTA have been working together on this Atascadero Transit Site Selection Study, and we found this to be the perfect opportunity to look for funding for this because this funding is for transit. This one is exactly what the funding is for. And when we rated the funding for this with other projects in the county of San Luis Obispo, this one ranked number one, so the board has interest in this project also. Fiscal impact, we're asking you to authorize the application of $2.5 million of 1B funding. The application and criteria have not been released yet, and they could tell you verbally what the sites are.
I have. Does that hurt any of our negotiation with those sites if we start dealing them out right now.
Yeah, I'd prefer to do it in a more orderly fashion.
Yeah, why don't we wait on that?
Thank you.
The city attorney is shaking his head.
Yes. So.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Thank you. Well, being our city's representative on the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, I did fight pretty hard for this, and I have to say it was a fairly easy fight because I do want to really commend staff. Our Steve Kahn, city engineer, and staff were very proactive. We were very well positioned. As you know, we requested some funding early on where we got our study in, and that was a approved study to prepare us for this 1B funding, and we were ahead of cities on that, and I can speak on behalf of SLOCOG and the staff of SLOCOG. They very much like this project that staff have put together, and we are very competitive. We are at the top of the list for that $2.5 million. So this is the time for our city to get this transit center. And I want to really commend staff and Steve Kahn for really positioning our city well on that. I do want to just throw out a couple of thoughts and see if this is feasible. My personal vision would, having seen so many historic pictures of our original train station in Atascadero, is there any chance that we could borrow from that theme on the design? Has some of those historic issues been considered, or is it too early in the stage?
It is too early. We haven't gotten into our architectural features, but I have written down your idea, and it'll be considered.
Check out those pictures. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Seeing no other questions of the council, I'll close it to the council, open it to the public. Mr. Greening?
Eric Greening, transit rider. I ride the North County Shuttle and the slur to Route 9. And, yes, I also agree with the compliments of Mr. Kahn. In fact, when the first round of applications went out to get the money to actually do the study that is now ongoing, this application prepared by Steve ranked at the very top. Now we're looking at the larger application to actually construct the facility, and so I have faith that Steve's work will be solid, and the consultants that have come in are also doing solid work. We have had an excellent public process. They've even proven very adaptable. They picked a date for one of the workshops that happened to be at the same time as the showcase mixer, and obviously it would be very undesirable to have a discussion about what should happen downtown when all the businesses were somewhere else, and so they were able to do a quick save and move the date and redo the publicity. So I'm very encouraged about the way this is going. One nuance that I don't know if we've captured here, it is likely that a local match of some sort will be required, and the idea of return to council when we need the local match. I would like to think that we might be returning to the redevelopment agency for the local match if that were possible, a local match, and it would seem the ideal source since this is going to revitalize the downtown and increase the tax collections therefrom. Would be the redevelopment agency. So I don't know if anything needs to be worded in here, return to council and or redevelopment agency. I know it's the same people, but sometimes you have to get a little fussy about how you word those things. Other than that, obviously, a lot of the details are still to be covered, and so I will just hold my comments at that and look forward to diving into the next workshop when it happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. And I believe that's the intent, the redevelopment funds, to use redevelopment funds. We try to do that whenever possible.
Good evening. Steve Martin, Atascadero Main Street. As you head down the trail of funding for this facility, I just wanted to report to you that the Main Street Design Committee has discussed this issue and made recommendations to the Board of Directors, and the Board of Directors has taken the position that they do support a transit center located somewhere in the downtown. Advocating many of the issues that you've already listed on the screen here tonight, particularly those involving pedestrian safety, lighting, and bathrooms, and also, if possible, to use green building techniques wherever possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. That's good advice. Anyone else want to speak on this? Seeing none, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the council, and ask for a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Got a motion by Councilmember O'Malley and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Brindler for the staff recommendation. Any discussion?
Discussion, yeah.
Councilmember Clay?
I just want to re-emphasize bathrooms, okay? This fellow that came with Destination Development, Roger Brooks, his biggest criticisms was that we didn't have bathrooms in the downtown area, and they're one of the best attractions for tourists. Once you go into a community, you find a bathroom, and you come back a year later, you go to that same community. So bathrooms are important.
I would agree. And you know, are you pitching for a break?
That sounds like a good idea.
I'm holding off.
Call a question.
Okay, call a question.
I just had a quick question. Does staff feel we need to change the wording that who it comes back to, or are we all clear on that?
I think we're clear.
Okay, we're clear. Roll call, please.
Councilmember O'Malley?
Yes.
Councilmember Clay?
Yes.
Councilmember Bayrou?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Brendler?
Yes.
Mayor Luna?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Okay, the next item is the commission norms and procedures. Assistant to the City Manager, Marcia Torgerson, will give a staff report.
Thank you, Mayor Luna. Yes, it's on the council, the commission norms and procedures. The council adopted your own norms and procedures back in May at your team development meeting, and then you directed staff on June 26th to create a similar document for the commissions reflective of your document. So the staff did create a commission norms and procedures document, and we distributed it to both commissions. They've both reviewed them. And if you look on page 213 is the document we actually gave the commissions initially. And then the Planning Commission, the one they turned into us, starts on page 218. And it's the same document with some either additions or deletions that they've recommended. And then the Parks and Rec Commission section starts on page 223, and that's the section that they added their amendments or deletions.
File them so they are... Sure. Consistent between each other, in case they're not?
I have a question on that. For example, they say working for community versus personal purposes, and then needs to be clarified or deleted. So I don't know whether we want to clarify it or delete it. It's pretty obvious to me what was intended.
I've got some questions.
I like that.
Well, yeah, so you wouldn't want to delete it, but do we need to clarify it? That's the question. So be thinking about that. Councilmember O'Malley,
Thank you.